8:12 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, members of Park City's sustainability and public utility teams met with the Park City Council last week to look first at the goals and strategies to implement what is being called the Water and Energy Resiliency Program. In the studio to tell us more about that, I have Jason Christensen, Water Resources Manager, and Bina Skordis, Sustainable Energy Project Manager. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Bina, do you want to start? I mean, can you tell us what the Water and Energy Resiliency Program is?
Yeah, so it was originally brought on because we recognized that the Water Department uses a lot of energy within the city, and we decided and we got direction from Council to make this a big emphasis within the city to make the Water Department a lot more energy efficient.
Okay, so the Water Department is the culprit here then, Jason?
I don't know that we're the culprit as much as we provide a resource to the community that takes a lot of energy to provide, especially in a community like Park City where we need to move water uphill and sometimes quite a ways uphill.
So is the goal behind this program to reduce the city's energy environmental impact or the residents?
So, I think it's both, actually. So, one of the things we're going to look at is how can we do what we do better and more efficiently? And one of the things we're also going to look at is how can we continue to encourage conservation in the community? Because the best way to reduce our energy footprint is actually not to move that water uphill in the first place.
Yeah. Certainly it's a tricky proposition, though, when you start to think that you can change others' behaviors, only because until we try to change our own, we don't really know how difficult it is. So how is it, what are some of the ideas for making the changes?
Behavior is a lot harder to change than the pumps. So we're going to focus primarily on capital projects right now and figure out within the Water Department where can we make changes, and whether that's local renewables, putting solar panels on pump stations, or that's changing the way we pump. Like as a whole, the way that we are putting water uphill, bringing it back down, can we put in a different micro hydro turbine to capture some of that energy? Can we do, there's a lot of different options. And so we're trying to figure out which ones make sense right now and prioritize those and then go forth and prosper.
Okay. So when you talk about the goals of the program, it's reducing the peak demand of water and energy, reducing the money spent per unit of energy, reducing energy consumption per gallon per pump foot, producing local renewable energy. Talk a little bit more about how some of those things could be done.
Absolutely. So the first one, reducing peak demand. The way the Rocky Mountain Power charges energy is they charge for when you're an industrial user, they charge you for the amount of energy you use and then how much energy you use in just an instant of time. So one of the ways you can reduce that peak is by making sure you're turning motors and pumps on sequentially and trying to reduce that peak demand, because if we're able to reduce that peak demand, we reduce our energy charge from Rocky Mountain Power.
So are we using that then during the peak demand now? I mean, and should we think about turning them on at night?
We absolutely should. And that's two of the things we think are going to be our focus early in this program, is trying to shift our energy usage to night and trying to spread out our energy usage over time to reduce that peak demand. Those are both easy, not easy, but initial steps that we'll be working on right away.
Part of it is that we've got to have enough storage, right?
Absolutely.
Because, what we're doing it is that we're pumping it while we need it.
Absolutely. And one of the interesting things is our system is designed for that peak demand during the summer. So for most of the year, we have the storage we need to be able to shift that energy consumption into the night hours where energy costs are lower.
All right. And then when Bina talked about producing local renewable energy, you talked about just installing panels on pump stations and...
I think the biggest part that when we say the produce local renewable energy is we're not going off-site. We're not going to invest in a big solar farm far away we actually want to produce and become a better energy, more efficient, a better energy efficient water system and not just pay our way into it, but really work towards a more efficient system. And so, the solar panels on a pump station is one of the ideas, or on a storage tank. So we're trying to figure out what options make the most sense and figure that out.
Mm-hmm. And then you'd always have the backup just in case.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And we could we have a lot of ideas of maybe putting solar panels on top with a battery charger inside the pump station and then be able to trickle charge that and have that as backup.
So what is the goal then of the program? I mean, do you have a number that you hope to reduce this by? Or?
You know, we don't have a goal yet. And part of the reason we don't have a hard goal yet is we haven't had the conversation with council yet about how much this is going to cost. And we want to be sensitive to that. And when we have that conversation, we want to make sure it's informed by the cost of setting different kind of target goals for the water department. And that conversation is coming up. We have that scheduled for November 19th with City Council.
All right. Any idea of just some of the things you've laid out, how much it would cost?
You know, at this point, we're still really developing those numbers. We segmented the discussion with council so we could first talk about exactly what the goals we thought the program should be were, so that we could return and return with hard numbers as far as the costs associated with those goals.
All right. So what kind of response did you get from council?
It was extremely positive. It was really good to hear. I mean, everyone on the council was very positive. So we're excited to move forward. And moving forward, we actually put out an RFQ recently for a consultant to come in and help us develop this program a little better so that we have an idea of what we're doing and what our goals are so that we can come up with more defined goals with hard numbers and actually know how to implement them. And we picked a consultant last week. So.
Okay, so what's an RFQ as opposed to an RFP?
A request for qualifications. So it was we received statements of qualifications rather than, I guess you can probably speak on this.
Yeah, rather than specific proposals. So we know what our goals are, and staff is energized behind those goals, but we don't really have all the expertise we need to tackle this problem. So we're looking at outside qualifications, outside experts in the field to help us define further exactly what we want to accomplish with this program.
All right. So we'll see it again November 19th, and it'll move forward from there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You also introduced to council on Thursday the employee electric vehicle charging stations. These are being proposed for the public works area?
That's correct. The parking deck of the public works facility. The city had a request from an employee to provide an EV charging station. And so Matt Abbott with the state sustainability team drafted a staff report to take that before council and basically asked, is this something council's interested in supporting? And if so, staff will return with a detailed policy kind of outlining when the city would provide an employee charging station and also take a look at our public charging stations as well.
So the bulk of, I'm guessing, city employees are either at the Marsec building or at Public Works. So that's pretty much where the staff's concentrated.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, we also have a concentration at the Mark and at the ice rink. But those two facilities you listed probably have the bulk of city employees.
Yeah. So how many are we talking about?
We'll be looking at installing two charging stations at Public Works. One of the added benefits of installing those charging stations at Public Works is it also gives us the opportunity to evaluate electric vehicles for some of our fleet needs and begin testing the water of EV vehicles as a city fleet solution.
All right. How many employees do you know that are driving electric vehicles? So you had just a request from the one?
Yeah, we had a request from one. As far as I know, there are two city employees with EV vehicles right now, one at the Marsac facility and one down at Public Works.
So, again, the proposal is to have it as a free charging station for employees?
It is, and there was some discussion about that. And one of the things that Councilman Bierman brought up is right now we're in the early adopter phase of electric vehicles. And his belief is that the number of adopters are going to increase over time. And we most likely will be looking at reevaluating that free charge in the future and actually passing on that cost of electricity to the employees. But right now, given the added cost of somehow tracking that electric use, the added costs seem to just outweigh the benefit of recovering that small value for electricity.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, what about the rest of town? I mean, are there plans for future EV stations?
Absolutely. That was part of the discussion, and I think staff received direction to return and discuss with council more EV charger locations. Matt Abbott's taking the lead on that, but given that council approved these charging locations at Public Works, staff will definitely be returning with further discussion about EV charging in general.
All right. Well, I just noticed at Costco recently, they installed about a half dozen on their expansion. And I'm like, that's brilliant. I mean, because the longer you got people charging their car for free, the more money they are spending inside. So I guess there's some good thinking there.
Yeah.
Also, Park City is involved in what we're calling the Ski Town Showdown Part 2. It's Park City versus Aspen. What's happening here?
Yeah, so that's more Mary Krista Smith. She's in charge of the Summit Community Power Works. She's the project manager there. And I got the most recent numbers from her this morning. And I guess 2,100 LEDs were switched out and 14 thermostats. And she wants me to encourage people to record their switches to her at mcsmith@scpw.org.
Do we have any idea how Aspen's doing?
I guess behaviorally, Park City is winning, which I'm not quite sure what that entails, but yeah, go Park City.
Do we know what you win other than bragging rights?
Yeah, well, no. I don't know.
Probably just bragging rights.
Probably. It's okay. Good enough for us, probably.
And then also just a quick mention, people can find out a lot more about how the council candidates feel about energy efficiency. There's a forum specifically for energy efficiency tomorrow.
You know, I've heard that. I don't have any information on it, Leslie, but I understand that that's the case.
Okay.
And there's not much city involvement in that as of this, from what I hear.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Anything else you two wanted to mention?
No. Thanks for the time to talk about the water and energy resiliency program. Staff is very excited about it, as well as council. And we'd encourage any of the public that are interested in that conversation to come out on November 19th.
Okay. Are we calling it WERP?
We are right now. We're in search of a better abbreviation, though.
Okay. Hey, Bina and Jason, thanks for your time. 8:29 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we reported, Park City's Ted Ligety winning the opening World Club Giant Slalom there in Solden, Austria. On the phone with me with an update, Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Leslie. How are things back in Park City?
Beautiful, with snow in the forecast for later on in the week.
Well, that's really good to hear. I tell you, the conditions over here in Austria have been absolutely sensational, particularly in the last few weeks. A lot of new snow and training conditions excellent. So the team's actually deciding to stay over a little bit longer and get a little bit more training in up on the glacier in Solden. Ideal race conditions this weekend.
All right. Well, as I mentioned, Ted Ligety pulling it off for the first race of the season. Tell us about that.
Well, it was an amazing accomplishment by Ted Ligety, and in doing so, winning his fourth time at Solden, he moves ahead of Herman Meyer as the winningest athlete ever here in Solden. They've been racing here since 1993 with the traditional Audi Fifth Ski World Cup opener. Pretty amazing performance by Ted. He had his work cut out for him, I tell you, in this race. Marcel Hirscher and a host of others really putting down a challenge. Ted, as many of you may have seen in the Universal Sports coverage, coming down and losing a little bit of speed kind of towards the bottom of the steep section. And for those who know Solden, very, very steep middle section. Then it flattens out, and one of the flattest finishes on the World Cup. So it's really essential you keep that speed. He was able to accelerate through the final few gates on the steep and keep his speed into the flats. Very, very good gliding across the finish line with a big victory. Number four in Solden and puts him into the lead in the opening race here in the Audi Fifth World Cup season.
Okay. And so we've got races up next when?
A couple weeks till we race in Levy. Not sure exactly what the training program will be. Conditions are so good, as I mentioned, they are going to stay over here and continue training. Levy coming up the second weekend in November. That's going to be a real test with a slalom for the men, a slalom for the women, and then things will move for the women to Aspen over Thanksgiving weekend for the Nature Valley Aspen Winter National. And then for the men, they'll be up in Lake Louise with the first downhill of the season. The men will then switch it up. The women going up to Lake Louise the first weekend in December, and the men coming down to the Audi Birds of Prey race week for the first downhill of the season in the USA. That'll be another test for Steven Nyman and company. And, of course, Ted Ligety looking to win his sixth straight giant slalom on the course at Birds of Prey. So a lot of exciting action coming up, but a great way to kick it off for Ted this past weekend.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, I mean, you're staying in Austria because I actually had heard that Copper Mountain for the first time ever didn't open for early training.
Well, we're going to be at Copper, and I actually don't have a latest update on the schedule there, but we do plan to be at Copper sometime in early November, as we typically do. Right now, the conditions are so good over here that we just wanted to keep the training base over here. So athletes are going to stay over here and do some training at Solden. Both the men and the women are going to spend some time over here. On the women's side this weekend, Michaela Schifrin, not repeating the win that she had a year ago, but she did come up with a great finish in second place. Federico Brignoni of Italy won her first World Cup, was just absolutely unbeatable, but a good performance by Michaela Schifrin. She was happy with that finish. She'll continue training and look forward to getting back in action in the slalom at Levy in a few weeks and then at Aspen with the giant slalom. Lindsey Vonn, by the way, was here in Solden, actually is still here training. Been spending a little bit of time with her up on the hill. She chose not to race. It's her first time back on snow since fracturing an ankle earlier this summer. She looked very, very strong training in giant slalom on Thursday at Friday, and then on Saturday actually went into a speed course training Super G, ran seven runs of Super G. Big smile on her face. She is clearly in good shape. It wasn't really in the cards for her to come back here in Solden, but we'll look forward to seeing her over Thanksgiving at Aspen and then on up to Lake Louise for the opening speed events.
All right. And any word from Bodie?
No word from Bodie yet. I don't think we're going to see him out there this season. I do think we'll see him back racing again. He did spend some time on skis this summer down in Port Teal. But I don't think we're going to see him back on a race course this year. But I do think that we'll see him back on skis eventually. So I don't think we've seen the last of Bodie Miller.
So in order for him to race, he would have to pre-register for a race, right? So you would know at least a few days in advance.
He's not really trained in order to get back into racing. So I'm really not anticipating that we'll see it this year, but I do think that we'll see it sometime in the future. You know, the one thing that's interesting about Bodie is that he hasn't really needed the level of preparation that some athletes do, and he's been able to really get back into the game without the full depth of preparation. He showed that last year, actually, where he was very competitive at World Championships. He hadn't run a race. He had trained, but he had not run a race until World Championships last year. So, you know, with him, he's really a phenom, and hard to say exactly what his next steps will be. But my instinct is we'll see him race again.
Okay. Tom, anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, just wrapping up our training right now. Cross-country team has been in Park City with Dryland, and that has gone very, very well. We unrolled our new L.L. Bean and Kraft Sportswear uniforms earlier this week. Freestyle Moguls has been over in Zermatt and also enjoying some of the great snow that we've had early season over here in Europe. In fact, we have snowboarding slope-style athletes right now over in Stubai, just one glacial valley over from Solden. They've been training on a great course over there. And then just a couple notes. I know that everybody in Park City is looking forward to a Live PC, Give PC coming up on Friday, November 6th, the end of next week. And we've got a couple of projects that we're going to be pushing on that day. For those of you who have been out to the Center of Excellence, you know we have an amazing trampoline area there. But we want to add a whole bungee system, which is going to be a huge asset for our acrobatic athletes. And the other thing we're looking at putting in out there is a skateboard vert ramp. Again, something really important for our half-pipe athletes. So hope everybody gets out and supports Live PC, Give PC, regardless of what the destination of your giving is. But hopefully you'll think of us at the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. And then just one last thing coming up this Thursday, the 49th annual New York Ski and Snowboard Bowl, our gold medal gala, taking place in New York City. A whole host of athletes, over two dozen athletes, will be out for that big event. So all these good indications, the season is right around the corner.
Okay, Tom, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. 8:38, good morning. Well, now is the time to clean out your old winter gear so you can get some new stuff. One of the largest, oldest ski swaps in America taking place next weekend at the Basin Rec Fieldhouse. Joining us this morning with a preview, Jesse Hunt, director of the Park City Ski Swap. Good morning. A ski team, I should say.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is the week that you need to start cleaning things out.
That's right. The snow's coming, as you reported earlier. So we're thinking it's time to get to that garage and take a look at what you got for ski equipment and figure out what you want to move on and what you need to buy for next year and start thinking about early check-in, November 2nd, beginning at the Jan's Mountain Outfitters and Cole Sport on Park Ave.
Okay. So when can you check stuff in then?
Well, that's when the early check-in starts, November 2nd. That's a Monday. We will check equipment in Monday through Thursday at those two locations, both Jan's Mountain Outfitters and Cole Sport on Park Ave, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then we start checking equipment in down at the Basin Rec at 3 p.m. We do that from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday. And then we turn over and start selling equipment at 8 p.m. That's when the sale starts, November 6th, 8 p.m., and we'll sell right into the evening and early morning. The sale ends at 1 a.m. on that Friday evening and morning. Then we go through the weekend, 7th and 8th. The sale ends at 2 p.m. on Sunday the 8th.
Okay, and your hours then on Saturday and Sunday?
Saturday we open up, and Sunday we open up at 10 a.m. Saturday we'll stay open till 6 p.m. And then, of course, on Sunday we're closing down at 2 p.m. So it's a pretty crazy. It's been a crazy Sunday. We've had lots of equipment right through the weekend. So you know we have such a large floor. We get a lot of great gear, and we can't sell it all. So even on Sunday at 2 p.m., there's still a lot of great stuff in the field house, and we've been lucky to have a really well attended Sunday. A lot of people who want to shop at a slower pace come in on Sunday. And there's still a lot of fantastic deals on the floor.
Okay, so the cost to get in Friday night is how much?
Friday night's $10. Under 12 is free. Saturday it's $5. Sunday $2.
Okay, and it's a fundraiser.
It is. The proceeds go to the Park City Ski Team, and we take 30% on a commission on sales.
All right. What's the best? You know, you basically don't accept stuff older than 5 years.
We want to have a lot of great stuff on the floor, so we avoid bringing stuff on that's of no interest, really. So we try to only check things in that are within about 5 years, you know, things that are, interesting for people to buy. And that's why I think we've been successful. We have a lot of great stuff on the floor.
So having something that's recently new, and what are some of the other things? I mean, making sure that the bindings work and, you know, the bindings are on the snowboard and things like that.
Exactly. I mean, you know, when you look at your gear, it's, you know, thinking that someone might want it. And, you know, it's funny when you're at check-in because some people are emotionally attached to their gear. They've loved it for a number of years and they think it's worth a lot more than it might actually be worth. But we have people checking things in and helping with pricing. And then, of course, during the sale, we have people on the floor helping with sales. So lots of volunteers, lots of people there with expertise that can help with that sale as well.
Okay. And again, if you want to sell it, price it right, huh?
That's it. Yep. I mean, we all want to see it move. And you know, if you price it right, it generally moves.
All right. If somebody's gear doesn't move, they will have to come back and get it, or what do you do with it if they don't?
Yeah, we have a pickup on Sunday from 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the Basin Rec Field House. You come and pick up your check for anything that you've sold, or you pick up your equipment that hasn't sold. That's 3:30 to 5 p.m. on Sunday.
And if they miss that, then what happens to the stuff that remains?
Well, they can either donate it to the Park City Ski Team, and we'll move it on to another charity. That's generally what we do. We prefer that people come and pick up their gear. But of course, if they don't make it during that period, then we will move it on to another charity.
All right. Let's see. Anything else that people want to know about this ski swamp?
Well, I just, you know, this is our 43rd annual. I think we've had a ton of success bringing great things into the field house and making it a great sale. And we're looking forward to another really, really good one. You can get more information on ParkCitySkiSwap.com website. That has all the times, all the information that we just spoke of this morning. So you can check in on that website. And as you said earlier, go on out to the garage, check out what you got, and check out what you might want to move. So we'll be waiting for you Monday morning, November 2nd. Jan's Mountain Outfitters in Colesport on Park Ave.
Okay, and real quick, is there an opportunity? I mean, if somebody realizes that they overpriced their equipment to reduce the price during the swap, or you don't encourage that?
Well, no, you can't change the price. And actually, that's what makes it so great, to be honest, because people price things right. And there's a lot of fantastic deals in the field house, which makes it exciting, which makes it interesting for people to come out, and particularly on that Friday night. There's screaming deals in there on Friday night. And it just makes it a really fun, exciting event.
Okay. In the meantime, what are the kids up to?
Well, we've got our athletes are preparing to go to Copper for some early season training. They've been delayed a little due to some warm temperatures there. But we are going to head over there this week with our groups and start the season training here in Colorado.
All right. In terms of number of kids, big year or?
Yeah, we have 200 kids in the program, so we've been growing, and we have a number of athletes who are at a very high level, and so that's what really drives this early season training and our programming in late October and early November.
Okay, and then the placement day, when does that happen?
That's December 5th. That's when we have an opportunity to move some new youngsters into the program, and we'll do that December 5th, and then our programming starts that following week with that younger group, those 9 and 10-year-olds who are coming into the program.
Okay. Jess, anything else?
Well, we're just a shout-out to Ted and the great job he did in the opener at the Solden World Cup. It's pretty cool to see our alumni winning World Cups, and he was joined by Tim Jitloff, who had a top 20 in the giant slalom. Two Park City Ski Team athletes leading the charge there at the highest level. So we're proud of them, and they're doing a great job.
All right, Jesse, thanks for coming in.
Okay.
It's Jesse Hunt with Park City Ski Team. It's 8:47. Good morning. Well, the Kimball Arts Center opened up its newly relocated center on Kearns Boulevard this weekend, featuring 90 works on loan from the collection of Jordan Snitzer and the Jordan Snitzer Family Foundation. Mr. Snitzer was on hand for the opening this past weekend, where I was able to catch up with him.
So just begin, if you would, by telling us a little bit about yourself and how it came to be that you amassed such an incredible collection of art.
Well, I grew up in Portland, Oregon, where I still live, and my mother opened an art gallery when I was in the third grade. So I was one of the lucky ones. I grew up with art around our house, and I love having art around me. I've said before that for me, waking up without art would be waking up in Park City without looking at the mountains. I need art around me all the time.
Now, are you an artist yourself, or you just love to look at it?
The artwork that I did, I finished in high school. So, there's a need to be a patron, and I love appreciating art.
Well, so there had to be that first piece of art, for you to have a collection of thousands. So tell me about, how is it that you were like, okay, I'm going to buy that, or?
Well, growing up, my mother had this art gallery. So I bought work starting when I was 14. I bought a small study, and it was $75. And with the family discount, it was $60, so I paid $5 a month. And as I've often said, if I missed a payment, I think she knew where to foreclose, since my bedroom was right next to hers.
And what was that piece?
It was a small study by a local Portland artist named Louis Bunce. And I have it in my dressing room, so I see it every morning.
And you were attracted to it for what?
I love the shapes, the forms, the colors. Mm-hmm. I love the depth of how his work would just take my breath away.
So how many pieces of art do you own now?
Well, we now own 9,000. We're building a major public collection, principally of works on paper. Prints, multiples, woodcuts, serigraphs, etchings. We're building a teaching collection. And I've had 95 exhibitions around the country at 75 museums. And I'm fortunate, I'm in the real estate business, so I'm able to do this for free. So we loan the work for free, we ship it, we give brochures that must be handed out for free. And then we offer the museums a chance to apply for grants to pay for bringing school kids in, or seniors, or artists in residence. You know, Leslie, it's just a shame that I'm so passionate about art, But art plays a critical role in our young people's education and lives. In a day and age when every young person has a smartphone and they're being told what to wear, what to think, where to go, what's happening, there's little time for reflection and for their individuality to explore itself. Art is the last venue where their spirit can just take them wherever they want to go.
Well, you gave a lot of kudos to Robin Moores, the director here at the Kimball, for her efforts in getting kids, you know, to see the arts and to teach them arts. Why your passion for that arts education?
Because unfortunately, as school districts across the country have had to cut back, arts programs are often the first things to cut back. So the fact that Robin, the amazing director here, indicated there were 14,000 kids that came last year to this facility, that's a real tip of the hat, and everyone in your audience should be so proud that the museum is serving that role of helping to fill part of the arts void in public education.
So you're still buying art?
Bought some this week.
So what do you look for when you're like, oh, I've got to own that?
I like art that speaks to me. And how does it speak to me? I love work by artists like William Wegman, who does all his works with those Weimar dogs, and he has them on couches and dressed up in basketball outfits. And how do you not look at that work and smile and pinch yourself and say, oh my gosh, whatever issues I'm having that day, take a breath. His work brings a smile to my face. I love work by artists like Sam Francis, that are these beautiful color field works. And then I love work like Andy Warhol and others in this exhibition that just grab me and won't let me go. The themes that these artists reflect in their work are the themes of my life, of your life, themes of the last 50 years, the themes that we've all been challenged by and are still being challenged by.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we've got here at the Kimball Arts Center. All of these pieces were selected around the concept of the iconic. What does that mean to you?
Iconic technically means a theme or image that represents a whole school of thought. And the work that's in this exhibition was so carefully picked that it explores 90 different themes that are relevant to this country.
Well, when I looked around, I mean, I saw Dorothy's ruby slippers, I saw a bottle of Coca-Cola, I saw Barbie, I saw a handgun, I saw the blueprints of Fred Flintstone's house. Maybe you can just, I mean, how are those iconic?
Think about the themes of our time. Those blueprints of Fred and Wilma Flintstone's house. That artist is talking about the role that TV played. Mark Bennett's the artist, the role that TV played in all of our lives. As the family unit broke down in the 60s and 70s and 80s and now, TV sitcoms, TV families have played a bigger role in our lives. They've become our families. Fascinating theme from a sociological standpoint about our time. The handgun. Well, look at the Pope a week before last was talking about capital punishment. The tragedy at the Umpqua Community College 2 weeks ago. Look at the role guns have played in society today without taking one side or the other. But that image, that Andy Warhol image of a gun, you can start there and take that theme wherever you want to go. It's as relevant today or even more so than it was almost 50 years ago when he created that image.
And then how could a can of Campbell's soup be so popular and so expensive, you know, if you had the original?
Well, Andy Warhol, who I think was probably the most important artist in the last half of the 20th century, he liked these iconic themes. He would pick images, Marilyn, Chairman Mao, cowboys and Indians, endangered species, soup cans. Andy Warhol graduated as a graphic artist. Before he became the famous artist we all know him to be, he worked for 10 years as a graphic artist in New York, and he did themes of shoes and commercial products. So it's natural for him when he focuses on food products to focus on Campbell's soup, one of the oldest products that commercially has been made since it first came out.
So this exhibit remains on display at the Kimball through like January 3rd. What is it that you would say to people, I mean, why they should come by and see these 90 pieces of work?
Oftentimes, art is viewed as something for someone else, some elitist group in some stodgy old building. But what's wonderful about this new space for this inaugural exhibition is it's a peppy space located right in the middle of town, plenty of parking, access for everyone. And this art, I guarantee each one of your viewers, if they come in here and just look at this, it will speak to them. They don't have to drag themselves in thinking, oh my God, do I have to see this old historical art? This is art that is their art, their time, the lives they've lived is all reflected in these themes. There's something here for everyone.
And I think it's so interesting here, a businessman, and you can talk about art and just become so passionate. Where does that come from?
Well, we all have our passions. And art for me, you know, I've got as many problems on any day of the week as anybody else. And one of the ways that I find myself refreshed is it's nice to sort of get away from yourself sometimes, because then you come back with a clear perspective on your issue. For me, art is one of those vehicles. I come in here, the art just grabs me, makes me think, takes me away, and then lets me go back to what I was doing with, consciously or unconsciously, a clear perspective on things. So not only does it bring joy to my heart, it helps me be a better person and make better decisions.
Well, thank you for loaning us your art, and we'll enjoy it for the next couple of months.
We hope all your visitors get a chance to, all your audience gets a chance to be a visitor and come to the museum.
Right.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you, Jordan Snitzer.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.